I'm Jessica Harris, and welcome to my welcome table. Gather round this special table. It's scarred with memories, pitted with burn spots from hot skillets, and decorated with moisture rings from frosty glasses of lemonade, beer bottles, bourbon and ginger ale, and untold goblets of red wine. This table will be our flying carpet as we travel around the world. I'll share some of my secret spots. We'll meet new friends and reconnect with old ones. Sometimes, the table will be covered with fine Porthot linen and my mother's bone china, and we'll sup on caviar and champagne. Other times, we'll cover it with yesterday's news and hanker down for a crawfish boil or a lobster supper. Whatever the meal, by the end of our time together, we'll have shared some special friends, sacred spots, and the food, drink, and music that connects them. So come, join me at my welcome table.
Hi, my name's Mitzi Pratt, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
I'm Patrick Dunn, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
My name is John Barkley, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
My name is Anne McBride, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
I'm Betty Fussell, and I, too, am sitting at the welcome table.
Compass Point, 29.96 degrees north, 90.06 degrees west. New Orleans, Faubourg Marigny, and the Bywater, the Creole suburbs. Now, I was minding my business over the Thanksgiving holiday when I heard outside of my door the unmistakable sounds of a brass band, and the parade seemed to be heading up my street. I went to the door, we call that door popping in New Orleans, peeked out, and discovered a bridal party. Formally dressed bride, tuxedoed groom, and their 70 or so guests were parading up my street, waving white handkerchiefs in time to the music. God, I love New Orleans, and I love my neighborhood. Now, anyone who has watched the HBO TV show Tremé knows that suburb of New Orleans, and it bills itself as the first black neighborhood in the country. That may be true, but the first Creole neighborhood in New Orleans after the French Quarter was what is today called the Faubourg Marigny. It was the first suburb to be developed after the city itself. Laid out in 1806, it was originally the property of Pierre-Philippe de Marigny de Mandeville, a well-born Frenchman connected to the founders of the city and to the French royal court. Now, his plantation ran from what is now Esplanade Avenue down to what is Franklin Avenue. His son, Bernard Xavier Philippe de Marigny de Mandeville, has been called one of the great personalities of New Orleans history, and indeed he was. Born to great wealth, in 1800 he was the richest 15-year-old in America. He suffered from what one author called, and I quote, a makeup of true Creole type, meaning that he was given to generous spending on pleasure combined with indifference to the cost. Now, no one seems sure where, indeed the story may be apocryphal, but the young Sieur de Marigny acquired a love of gambling and affection for the new dice game that he'd learned, played with two dice. Unfortunately, young Marigny was not particularly good at the game, yet he delighted at teaching it to others, and in doing so, he inevitably lost, and lost big. By the time he was 20, he'd significantly diminished his fortune and applied to the city for permission to subdivide his plantation and sell off lots. The plan of the newly opened suburb was dated March 16, 1806, and it linked the new streets in his subdivision, to the existing ones in the Vieux Carré, or the French Quarter. Benjamin Latrobe described it in 1819. New Orleans, beyond Royal Street toward the swamp, retains its old character without variation. The houses are, with hardly a dozen exceptions among many hundred, one-story houses. The roofs are high, covered with tiles or shingles, and project 5 feet over the footway, which is also 5 feet wide. The eaves never discharge water into the gutters. However, this mode is different from the American manner of building. It has very great advantages, both with regard to the interior of the dwelling and to the street. In the summer, the walls are perfectly shaded from the sun and the house kept cool, while the passengers are also shaded from the sun and protected from the rain. The suburb, with its small houses, quickly became a neighborhood of working-class people and was inhabited by French, Spanish, colonial families, Italians, Germans, Irish, a few Mexicans, and a large number of free people of color. Indeed, up to the last part of the 20th century, the population of the neighborhood remained not only virtually the same, but the same in virtually the same proportions as it was at its founding. It also remained essentially a working-class neighborhood. In 1949, John Chase could write about the neighborhood that, and I quote, "What was once the Faubourg Marigny remains a sleepy and tired-looking adjunct to the Vieux Carré, largely double-tenement residential in character." He's talking about Creole double houses, not tall tenement buildings. But Chase would not recognize the neighborhood today. Frenchman Street is the entrance to the area for many, and many people do not venture further into the wonderful neighborhood of small houses and 19th century architecture.
Camelback, Riverside Shack, a Creole shotgun, little yard out back, a cool breeze and Wrigley's blowing through my banana trees, and rusty freight drifting from an ocean far away. Cat dog shadows on my back porch at the sad time of day. Well, now I'm just trying to tell you a feeling I can't.
Now, I thought I was late to the party when I arrived with bags, baggage, books, bubblegum, and bravado in 1998 to a Creole double that dates back to the 1840s. It has a parterre garden that was then planted with period roses and strawberries. Fraise du Bois, in fact, is ground cover. It was centered by an ornamental pomegranate tree. Behind, a second building housed two apartments. I was delighted to discover that it was pictured in the volume 4 of the classic series New Orleans Architecture, The Creole Suburbs, by Wilson, Toledano, Evans, and Kristovich, complete with the notice, and I quote, "The block illustrates the pleasing symmetry resulting in the continuing rows of gable-sided buildings of similar proportions." However, while I thought I was a laggard, I seem to have found that I was actually in the avant-garde of a second wave of people, pre- and post-Hurricane Katrina, that transformed my new neighborhood from a quiet French Quarter-adjacent enclave into the hottest and hippest neighborhood in the city. Ironically, to one who has lived for the last 25-plus years in Kings County, my New Orleans hood is now known as the Brooklyn of that city for its vibrant nightlife, trendy neighborhood restaurants, and growing number of artists and artisans who reside there. Music, as I said, is often the first lure to the area. Music lovers in the know, head to the city, tune to 90.7 FN, and know that WWOZ's Live Wire music calendar is every music lover's entry point to the city's amazing music scene. They should also pick up a copy of The Gambit, a community newspaper that's heavy on New Orleans culture, and if they can find it, want to hoot at. Most of the real music lovers venturing to the Crescent City know that in those listings, while some of them may be on Bourbon Street basically has the attention of tourists. Those who want the harmonies without the hype and the craft without the crass know that Frenchman Street in the Marigny pulses with activity from dawn to dusk. Some folks will also remember the street as the New Orleans stop for the chef and his food truck in the recent film, Chef. There are few food trucks, however, on Frenchman, but restaurants abound. Those who head over in the morning will find the street recovering from its late night before. Locals might stop in for a cup of coffee at the Café Rose Nico to catch up on news. And tourists may just be out wandering, checking out the bills of who's playing where posted in club windows. And they might stop for a cup, too.
'Cause those basic things make me feel so good. Like some handmade music and some homemade food.
Things begin around lunchtime. A stroll then might involve a stop at Café Negril for Jamaican food, including some wicked jerk and some rum. Or they might head for a meal of red beans and rice, Mondays particularly, at the Prawling Connection, of course, with the eponymous candy for dessert. Crawfish fritters, boudin balls, and seafood gumbo beckon at the Marigny Brasserie, a local standby, with a musical brunch on weekends. Three Muses lures with a full menu and music. Choose from dishes like Mrs. Moon's Bulgogi Rice Bowl or Lamb Sliders or vegan or gluten-free selections. Enjoy a muse while deciding. Now, that's not a rude suggestion, but the club's signature drink of cucumber-infused Hendrix gin, blueberry syrup, Saint-Germain liqueur, and lime. And it's lovely. The music usually begins after lunch in the early afternoon when the hardcore music lovers hit the streets. DBA, The Spotted Cat, and Snug Harbor are well-known favorites, but newer, smaller spots also add their notes to the mix. Snug Harbor is the classic venue. It's been in existence for more than 30 years. It's the gold standard of jazz clubs. I first heard of the place when, decades ago as a young journalist, I wrote an article interviewing jazz greats on their favorite clubs. Memories fade as to which of the artists nominated Snug, as it's called by aficionados, but I interviewed jazz royalty, the Count, that's Basie, the Duke, Ellington, Natch, Jerry Mulligan, and others, and Snug came up more than once. Nowadays at Snug, the royalty is named Marsalis, and the patriarch of the family is a regular at the piano. A recent weekend featured Branford, Jason, Delphio, all Marsalises, and Charmaine Neville, Philip Manuel, Spencer Boren, and Heron Riley Quartet. Amazing lineup. Down the street, DBA, an offshoot of a New York City pub, is open from 4 p.m. till 4 a.m., and it pulses with the beat of everyone from John Boutte to the Tremé Brass Band to Walter Wolfman White. The music just surrounds you. Even the streets pulse. Across the street, the Spotted Cat may feature the Pfister Sisters, a local singing group that does 40s-style songs in close harmony. Or it may be some name you don't even know, but who is so good you wonder why you've never heard of him. It's just that kind of street in that kind of city. Frenchman Street, though, is simply the entry point into a neighborhood that is filled with hidden treasures and surprises. architecture is amazing. Remove the cars, squint your eyes, and it's possible to see that area as La Trobe did in 1819. 2, 3, and 4 bay Creole cottages, those were the low-rise buildings that La Trobe was describing, stand cheek by jowl with later shotgun houses, so named because a bullet fired through the front door would exit from the back door of the house, with the rooms lined up enfilade, as they do in what we call in New York City a railroad flat. Tall Creole townhouses and brick row houses are all on display for the architectural scholar in one of the few antebellum neighborhoods still intact in the city. Now, the Marigny and the Bywater are also a strolling part of the city, one dotted with coffee houses and small restaurants where locals, who tend to be artists and writers who make the city their home, find sustenance. Ink-stained scriveners seek relief from cursing the flashing cursor, and artists find refuge from charcoal, canvases, and creativity. Or sometimes they just both seek like company for companionships while they dream up future projects. Places where they meet: the Orange Couch on Dauphine, the Cake Cafe on Royal, and many others. Satsuma, further down on Dauphine in the area known as the Bywater, provides respite as well as a wicked fried green tomato BLT and marvelous juices in a funky setting that comes complete with Wi-Fi. Newly opened Port Street Station showcases the culinary arts of the students at the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts, a high school in the model of the famed New York High School of Performing Arts. Fame, I'm going to live forever. But the model in New Orleans celebrates not only the creative arts, drama, music, and dance, the plastic and fine arts, but they've recently added culinary arts. The school serves as a cultural anchor of the neighborhood and offers not only instruction, but performance.
This train don't care no gamblers, this train. This train don't care no gamblers, this train. This train don't care no gamblers, no whiskey drinkers, no bars.
Port Street Station, the restaurant, purveys not only breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but also offers a note of history, as the restaurant is across the street from the historic marker that signals the spot where on June 7, 1892, Homer Adolphe Plessy was arrested from the East Louisiana Railroad train in an act of civil disobedience that attempted to overthrow the segregation laws of that time and foreshadowed the civil rights movement that would eventually do so with the 1954 Supreme Court decision that overruled the statute of separate but equal.
Give me a shrimp, old boy, dressed, and a cold, cold beer. A shrimp, old boy, dressed. Hurry, bring it here.
Increasingly, restaurants are luring folks to my hood. It began quietly in the Bywater at first with places that were neighborhood places that took advantage of lower rents to offer sophisticated food at neighborhood prices. Café Maurepas offers a well-edited menu of small plates based on local fare, and it was one of the first to arrive, followed by Booty's, bad name but good restaurant, which offers small plates of international street food. Across the street, Oxalis boasts a whiskey bar that would tempt a teetotaler. Maritza, in the old cotton press building, is an Italian spot that's so trendily popular that a bar wait, if you can find a spot at the bar, is virtually obligatory. Bao and Noodle on Port Street offers the kind of Chinese fare I wish I could get around the corner in New York, with steamed and fried pork buns, the bao, as well as a variety of noodles, and nightly specials like steamed fish with ginger and scallion. Yearling, the Franklin, lures with its crudos, its jerked quail, and its neighborhood vibe as well. Sometimes, though, you just have to cook. Then, the hood offers some unique possibilities. The St. Rock Market on St. Claude is a newly renovated market, one of the old covered markets that the city had in abundance well into the 20th century. It had fallen on hard times and eventually into dereliction, but was brought back as a food court, with vendors offering everything from gumbos to salads to freshly shucked oysters. And it's New Orleans, so there's a full bar. There is also, thankfully, some produce that comes straight from the local farms. I even brought a fig tree here for the backyard on one foray. The pickings are not lavish, but they are local, and they are close. Across the street, in the Healing Center, there's a food co-op, and that also brings the bounty of the Gulf to the market. And in my neighborhood, there is an old Mardi Gras barn that has been transformed into an international wonderland of ingredients, including fresh produce that is locally sourced. Finally, my favorite thing about my neighborhood is that it can be truly old-school New Orleans. On a schedule that I have yet to figure out, I can hear the distinctive call of our neighborhood street vendor, Mr. Okra. When I do, I hop to the door to see what he's got on the back of his truck that's decorated like a Haitian tap-tap by Dr. Bob, another neighborhood stalwart. Sometimes it's fresh melons, at others it's citrus, and there are always sweet potatoes, and always the holy trinity of bell pepper, onion, and celery, without which much of New Orleans food would just simply not be the same. Then it's time to hit the kitchen, work some magic, and rejoice in a place that I'm proud to say is my second home. My hood may have gone upscale, but it knows who it is, and somehow, no matter what the changes, it will never be anything else than naturally New Orleans. Until next time.
He must kill it good and greasy when I'm gone, gone, gone. He must kill it good and greasy when I'm gone.